You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Archaeology Show, episode 297.
On today's show, we share the live episode recorded for the 10-year anniversary of the APN back in December.
Let's dig a little deeper into the APN. I don't know. Gladiator. Movies. Let's talk about movies.
Sure.
Okay, so on this episode, like we said, it's going to be just a little bit different because we did record it live and we were sitting in the backyard of my sister-in-law's house. Mm-hmm. So we did not have a live audience physically, but we did have one digitally.
Yeah, I think we took some questions from the Discord peoples and it was a review of the Gladiator 2 movie that we had just seen. And we kind of talked about the movie, which we did cover that on this episode. We did cover that on the show too back then, but this is just a more in-depth look at the characters, the people who they were based on, and like, you know, just a full-on review. And then we do some APN stuff at the end too. So it's kind of fun. And we are currently traveling. So we hope you all forgive us for not having brand new content, but
yeah, also keep, this is episode 297. I don't want to make too many big promises for episode 300, but we're trying to maybe do some cool stuff for episode 300. We're not sure. We're just the traveling. We're sitting in a hotel in Stockholm, Sweden right now.
Yes, we are.
And I don't know if every hotel in Stockholm, Sweden has a sauna, but this one does in our room. That's pretty sweet.
So, yeah, we're going to be doing the sauna and doing a couple, not rerun episodes, but like bonus episodes for the next couple weeks while we're traveling. And then we'll hopefully have some cool content from the places that we're visiting. And, you know, after that.
That's right. Yeah. So that will be episode 297. 298 will be a bonus episode that we're going to put on our feed that you haven't heard unless you're a member of the APN, arcpodnet.com/members.
Yes.
And then also we will have,
oh, we have one news episode ready to go too. So we'll get some news in there too. And
exactly. We've got that ready to go. So we'll drop that. And then hopefully if we can get our crap together, also 300 will be super cool.
Yeah.
If not, it'll be us doing news again.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
the 300th time.
No promises.
But we've got some cool stuff that we're definitely going to talk about because we're doing the Ice Hotel this week. If you've never heard of the Ice Hotel, go check it out. It's not historical at all.
It's not at all.
This is the 35th incarnation of it.
It's like the opposite of historical because it like melts every year. So it doesn't stay.
It's literally not historical, but they've been doing it for 35 years, which is also not historical. Because this is Ice Hotel 35.
Yeah.
And I guess if you want to look at like an igloo or something like that in, you know,
using traditional techniques or whatever. Yeah.
This is that on steroids. Yeah. Right. So anyway, and then we're going to London. We're doing the British Museum. We're doing all kinds of stuff in Southern
Stonehenge
England.
Stonehenge is certainly on the list.
Stonehenge is on the list. If anybody from English Heritage is listening, please contact me. I've emailed you. Chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. We're not looking for any behind the scenes special treatment, but we would like to talk to somebody, maybe do an interview.
Yeah, I'd love to do an interview.
Yeah. So, you know, let us know. So anyway, with that, we will play our really good episode, I think.
Yeah, it was recorded. Fun. It was really fun. I listened through the whole thing to get this ready and it's fun. Yeah.
This was again recorded on December 1st of 2024 and we did a full 8-hour day. I think it was 8 hours, might have been longer, of all the shows on the APN doing a live presentation for our 10-year anniversary of the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Right.
Here it is.
Well, we've got a couple things planned. Mm-hmm. Please, this is interactive, so we're just going to kind of do our normal show for a little bit here. Sort of, actually. Not really, though.
Well, kind of, because, like, you know, for those that listen to us pretty consistently, you know that we do news stories, right? So we like to find, and by the way, I'm getting over a cold, so if I start coughing randomly, just ignore me. I'll be fine in a second. Yeah. I have water. I'll be good. and if my voice sounds scratchy, that's why. But anyway, so we, you know, we cover news stories. We like to look at archaeology in the news, how it's covered by journalists and also how it's reported in papers, who's doing a good job, who's doing a bad job, that kind of stuff. So for anybody who doesn't listen to our show regularly, that's what we like to cover. And we were setting up our episode for this week, and one article that popped into our feed was all about Gladiator and what the movie got right, what it got wrong about gladiators in general. And we were like, oh, this is our wheelhouse, isn't it?
So we decided to go see the second Gladiator movie last night.
We did.
Which was great.
It was a little bit impromptu. Like, all of a sudden yesterday, yeah. we were like, why don't we just, like, talk about gladiators and Rome and their portrayal in the movies as our show today? So there you go. That's what we're going to talk about. We'll try to keep spoilers to a minimum, but I think that the movie and, like, the big plot lines of it are kind of well known to most people, hopefully. So, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. All right. So... First off, we were confused on this. If you haven't seen the first Gladiator with Russell Crowe,
yes,
I recommend going see Man of Recaps on YouTube.
Oh, we should link to him. He's the best.
We should link to him. Yeah. Every time we want to see a recap on something, he does most of the good stuff out there, but he is just fantastic on his recaps.
Yeah, totally.
Very entertaining. But I mean, honestly, see the movie if you want to see it. But if you don't or you don't remember it, it's a really quick synopsis because you could probably see this one without seeing the other one. There's obviously... one big plot element that you'd be missing out on.
So there are connections between the people and the characters in this movie to the first one. And there's even one character who carries over from the first one into the second movie. So it is helpful to know that, but I will be totally honest. I was like trying to think, and I don't think I had ever seen the first Gladiator. And I did not see it before we went to C2 last night.
But watch the recap, though.
I did watch the Man of Recaps, and he does such a good job of...
Tilly's like, what?
I know. He's so good. Seriously. And I know, the fact that I haven't seen the movie is ridiculous. Yeah. Look, it came out in 2000. I was in high school. I was doing different things with my life than going to see historical period movies. That's just the way it was back then.
She says you call yourself an archaeologist.
I know. It's terrible.
I know. It is historical fiction.
It is. Yeah. It is.
Well, we'll get into it, though.
Yeah.
Because we actually have some information. Because that article that we're linking to for this episode, and actually we're going to discuss... this article in brief on our next episode as well.
Yeah.
On our full episode that's out on the Archaeology Show on Monday.
Yeah, we normally cover articles in like, 12 to 15 minutes or whatever. Yeah. So we'll do that brief cover. But we really wanted to like dig in a little bit more to our review of the movie and like all that kind of stuff on this live
for sure.
show.
For sure. So, all right. Well, let's talk about it. And because we also have another article I want to talk about a little bit later, and then we'll end and stick around, we'll end with a little bit of a APN 10-year anniversary celebration. Incidentally, he hasn't mentioned it anywhere, not that I expected him to, but Tristan co-founded this with me. If you saw the thing that he did earlier for Modern Myth, he talks about starting this network and him starting his first podcast, but he's a whiskey fan, like I'm a whiskey fan, and he likes Lagavulin, which is a Scotch whiskey. And I sent him one of the Nick Offerman edition Lagavulin bottles, and I haven't even tried it. I really want to try the Nick Offerman
the
barrel-aged Nick Offerman one. It's a 16, I think it was a 16-year-old Lagavulin Nick Offerman one. Yeah, it was pretty good. So we've got our own little celebration we're going to do.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't have Nick Offerman. Lagavulin, but.
Not my thing, so like I'm kind of okay with it, right. But you do you.
So anyway, let's talk about these gladiators and stuff, and because what does Hollywood get right? What are some myths that people think about gladiators, and what's the truth behind them?
You start off
while I switch my microphone.
Okay, and you had found one article, I think, that came from National Geographic. Let me look at my note here.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, and then I actually found a second one that was from Smithsonian, so I think we got our two favorite like places that publish articles in this. And we just sort of went through it to see, what the movies did right, what they did wrong. And because both movies, both one and two, were directed by, I think, Ridley Scott, so the same person, they really do have the same feel and the same flow with them.
Right.
The costuming was all beautiful,
in
both of them. Oh, by the way, I watched one today, so I've caught up. I can be called an archaeologist now.
Yes.
I've seen the first one, so I'm good.
Indeed.
But yeah, so the movies flow really well. They've got this nice costume. It's really beautiful. The acting is fantastic. And I felt like that was true for the second one as well as the first one.
Yeah.
So, but, these are movies about figures, historical figures in history, but it's more like a group of people rather than an actual person. Mm-hmm. So this is what these articles that we found were about, is like, what did they get right about this sort of amorphous group of people in history?
Yeah.
And so the first one is, just quickly, who gladiators are. They are seen as strong warriors. They are often armed with exotic weapons while fighting one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And they fight in various settings in any story involving Imperial Rome and highlight and contrast the brute strength of the fighters and the pampered decadence of the elite.
Yeah.
And like, that's like who they were. That's what they were doing. Right.
Yeah. So the first myth that the article goes over is, did they have nicknames?
Yeah.
Cause I didn't actually remember this. And maybe you saw this.
I did.
Gladiator.
Just watching the first one. Yeah.
apparently Maximus from the first one, his nickname was the Spaniard.
Yeah.
And again, I didn't really remember that, but it's true. You might think that nicknames and things like that in this sort of gladiatorial combat comes from, they even mentioned this in the article, like, you know, WWF or WWE, whatever your flavor is these days. But it's not true. It goes all the way back to ancient Roman times.
And it makes sense, right? Because it's a very theatrical thing. It's theatrical now. Wrestling is, right? And it was theatrical back then, even on the, you know, with the Colosseum as your stage. So, yeah.
Tilly, what would your gladiatorial nickname be? I think I'm just going to go with Webby. I don't know.
I'm the knitter. Watch out.
The knitter?
I fight with sharp objects.
She will tie you into knots.
Oh, my God. Nerds. Okay.
All right.
So they were known by these personas, and they had fans, they had followings, they were famous. And it does present this like weird dichotomy between these people who we'll get into a little bit more, like who they were and what their backgrounds were. But like, it's this dichotomy of these people who are kind of pressed into this service as gladiators in a lot of cases. And they were seen as not like, I don't know, they were looked down on by Roman society, but then they were also revered as these fighters. So it's really this like dichotomy and this bipolar like view of what they were and who they were. So it's interesting.
And it also, history, just studying archaeology and following the Archaeology Podcast Network will teach you that nothing's ever new. We just rehash old things over and over and over again, because these guys even had like signature moves and equipment sometimes, which like Mortal Kombat. If you were a child of the 80s and early 90s, you played Mortal Kombat, you played Street Fighter, all those fighting type games, even like Mike Tyson's Punch Out on freaking Super Nintendo.
Oh my God.
Was it Super Nintendo or
I
like
don't
regular
remember.
Nintendo?
I didn't play any
Somebody
of those
knows.
Games.
But it's those things they had, they all have like signature moves.
Yeah.
And that's not a new thing. Mm-hmm. Ancient Romans did it first.
Yep. Totally. Yep. Totally. So.
Yep. There was a real superstar back then. His name was Celadus the Thracian. I love that.
I know. It's so great.
Yeah. Apparently there's graffiti in Pompeii that celebrates his victories and his popularity with, and it specifically says the girls in parentheses. I was going to say the ladies.
Well,
when I
was reading this, that they were fangirls. This is like one of the first instances of like actual fangirls, like similar to what you think of today. And these women, young girls, were just obsessed with these gladiators. Yeah. So apparently I guess it's not much different than it is now, right?
Mike Tyson's Punch-Out was original NES.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I love
well,
it.
that predated me a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't. Yeah.
All right. Did they always fight to the death?
Yeah, I love that one, because they do make it seem like they're always fighting to the death in the movies.
Yeah.
Like, even when one gives up, like, there's a couple times in both the first movie and the second movie where a gladiator gives up in a battle, and then the Caesars, whoever they were at the time, you know, gives the order to kill the one that they decide is supposed to have died, right? Well, that is kind of complete fiction made up by this movie, because they needed the brutality and the
emotional.
Yeah, I know all movies, but they wanted that emotional like situation where somebody is dying. Right. The reason that they didn't often die is because, you know, they were, even if they were criminals or prisoners of war or slaves or somebody who was forced to be a gladiator, and many were, also many were people that volunteered to do it, that from the lower classes, but they were put into basically gladiator school.
Yeah.
And so much money, so much time, so much effort was going into making them these super fit, strong fighters that their owners, essentially sponsors, whatever you want to call them, was not about to let these guys die if they could help it. Yes, they did die sometimes. It did happen. But it would often end in a draw because, you know, preserve yourself for your next battle, right?
And again, a modern equivalent, the United States military. I don't know how other militaries do it, but you often hear of people saying, oh, it was either jail or the Marines, which is not, it's not wrong. People actually do that. They're said, hey, you go into military service and we will, you know, forgive
like
whatever
a judge
thing
in
you
a
did.
Court, like really say that?
There was at least two people that I knew in my squadron that were not, there weren't Marines, they were Navy. I was in the Navy.
Okay.
That were facing jail time.
Okay.
If they didn't go into the Navy.
If they didn't go, okay, well.
Yeah, they were minor offenses. It's not like they killed anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were just like, you know, kids who were just not down a right path. And they said, you join the military and we'll forgive all this stuff, right? But that's the thing is this was, I feel like this should be the slogan of the military because this was in the article. It says it was a career, not a punishment. Gladiators was. Because, you know, there were, like she said, criminals and POWs sometimes pressed into gladiatorial service, if you will. But yeah, for the most part, these people wanted to be there.
Yes and no. The article that I found said that there was a good mixture of both.
Yeah.
But even somebody who was pressed into service as a gladiator because they were a slave or a prisoner of war kind of ended up going with it because it just would end up making a better life for them in their position as a slave.
And
in the movies, it indicates that they could like maybe buy their freedom somehow. And I didn't find that that was necessarily true in the stuff that I read, but I honestly didn't like deep dive that one. So maybe it did happen sometimes, but it seems like it wasn't necessarily like a thing. They just lived better. They just lived better essentially by, you know, fighting the way that their masters or their owners wanted them to.
Stephanie from Pass Macabre saying she has a pic of his tune that she can't find right now. I'd love to see that photo roll on your photo.
Oh my God,
iPhone,
you have your pictures are the best
on your phone, Stephanie. It's just like tombs and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. Anyway,
all the cool places that we need to go to.
An archaeologist photo roll. All right. Did we mention they survived their bouts 9 out of 10 times?
We didn't, but that was the statistic. And I saw another one that said 5% of the gladiators over time would have died in combat or because of combat. So, less death than you would think.
Now, in Gladiator 2, we're not really giving much away here, but...
Little spoilery, but I think it's probably in the preview, right?
They do a decent job of doing a mock naval battle in the Colosseum where they fill it with water.
Yeah.
Which they did do.
That is real, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. But
in Gladiator 2, I believe I even whispered to you or something. I was thinking of it, but there were massive sharks.
Yeah,
at least three of them that I saw, maybe four, in the Colosseum that, like, when somebody got chucked over the board on one of these boats, they got you know, eaten by a shark immediately.
Yeah.
And I'm like, my first thought was just like, I'm like a
project. I think we were just like laughing.
I'm like a project manager. And first off, I'm thinking, okay, the water's one thing. How did they must like divert some aqueducts to get in there. I can buy the water.
I found the research on that.
Okay.
We'll get there. Yeah.
I can buy the water.
Yeah.
I do not buy ancient Romans transporting 15-foot long sharks to the Colosseum. I don't care how close the water was at that time.
Keeping them alive.
It. Yeah.
Keeping them, you know, I mean, I guess they would want, you would want sharks. Them to be hungry, but.
Yes. Steph says there were zero sharks.
Yes. That, and I think in that article that you found, the director was quoted as saying, who says they couldn't have gotten sharks there? Prove it. And I'm like, well, okay, fine. You're not wrong. We can't prove it, but it does seem highly unlikely.
Yeah.
However, it did make for a really great scene in the movie. Because they flooded the Colosseum, and we know that that is true. We'll talk a little bit more about how they did that and when they did that in a second. And then they staged this like mock naval battle between two ships, and it was really dramatic and it was super cool. And honestly, I think that scene alone is worth seeing it in the theater because it's just so dynamic. And I don't know if we said this yet, but we did both really like the movie. And that scene in part was one reason why I liked it because I thought it was just really cool. So
I do agree with Vitruvius here. He says if the Romans wanted to have sharks, they could.
Yes. The Romans could do anything, obviously.
Yes, but apart from sharks,
here we go.
Mock naval battles, and gladiators, what else have the Romans done for us?
What have they done for us? Well, did they do aqueducts?
They did aqueducts.
So the reason the aqueducts are important, you know, I was like setting you up to do that quote later in the episode.
I'll do it again.
Okay, well, great. So, okay, all right. There's no record of them bringing sharks, but that's fine. They did do these mock naval battles, though, and they did flood the Colosseum. And we know that they did that. They were doing stuff like this even before the Colosseum was built in other places.
Yeah.
Even as early as Julius Caesar's reign from, you know, before the Colosseum. So, like, this was definitely happening. But, okay, so this is a really cool dude named Cassius Dio. And he was a Roman historian who was writing all kinds of historical texts about Romans about 100 years after this happened. So it's later than it, but... he at least would have been within touching distance of the people who who lived in this time period. So, you know, it's a pretty good, like, resource. And he wrote that Titus, the emperor of Rome, staged a sea fight impersonating the Corcyrian and Corinthians in a naval battle from 434 BCE at the opening of the Colosseum. And the Colosseum opened in 80 CE. So it kind of seems like this is a little bit what they were mimicking with the movie, is this naval battle or one similar to this. And so they did a pretty good job of that, because that definitely did happen. And it really was like trying to, you know, show two ships fighting. Yeah. So, and then as far as flooding the Colosseum itself, this is so cool. Somebody has done a hydraulic study on the Colosseum, and they concluded that with the Agua Claudia, which is the aqueduct that would have supplied water to the Colosseum and the surrounding area at that time, they could have flooded the entire Colosseum deep enough to hold boats and also to like just have a like wet area to just do whatever they were doing, you know.
Yeah.
They could do that in 34 to 76 minutes, depending on how much water they wanted to put
quick.
In there.
That's yeah. quick.
34 to 76 minutes. That's like intermission, right? And yeah. then they're full of water. So yes, it definitely could be done, and it was done.
Stephanie actually said that Julius Caesar started the mock naval battles because it was a recreation of his victory over Egypt at Alexandria.
Okay.
She says I know she studies Egypt, but her site in Egypt is in the Roman era.
Okay.
She's
awesome.
She's like, I might get annoying.
No, I love it. I love it because like we do the research, you know, but like we're only two people and we only have so much time. So like we can't go down every single rabbit hole, you know?
She even says it was the wrong kind of sharks. I love that.
Yes. Perfect. I was kind of thinking that. I was like, weren't those like great white sharks?
Yeah.
And those are in the Pacific Ocean, right? Like
yeah.
not even accessible to the Mediterranean probably. So
right.
anyway.
All right.
Next thing.
So another kind of myth was, another thing people were kind of wondering about, I guess, was the diversity of ancient Rome. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, let's be honest, Denzel Washington
yes.
in the second one, a black man,
yes,
you know, ends up becoming kind of a de facto ruler
yeah.
of ancient Rome. Plus, there's a whole bunch of other people. You've got this doctor character who is, what is
probably
he like?
Arabic of some
probably
sort.
Arabic, yeah.
Yeah.
And you've just got people from all over. So mm-hmm. How true was that? Well, we've both been to Pompeii. We know how diverse the Roman Empire was, I guess. Just being in Pompeii and looking at some of that. But
yeah.
But it was really diverse.
Yeah.
Diverse. And they kind of got that right in Gladiator 2.
They did. And there was probably a lot. There was probably like biracial rulers and stuff and like things that aren't necessarily like specifically written in the histories, because it was just sort of common to kind of have mixed heritage in Rome mm-hmm. because of the way they were conquering the surrounding areas, Northern Africa, the Middle East, and bringing the peoples into the empire. And it just kind of like naturally created a bit more of a melting pot than you had in other places.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so Denzel Washington's character, which we're going to talk about him a little bit more because I did more research on him. I was interested in that character, was actually from Algeria, what is today Algeria. So he was from North Africa. So,
nice.
Yeah, it makes sense that he would have been black or Arabic or something like that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So something that's kind of the end of the article. They only covered like four myths about Gladiator or something mm-hmm. like that. But we wanted to dive in a little bit because I'm not a Roman scholar, unlike some of the people in the chat here, Steph. But at least an Egyptian Roman mm-hmm. scholar. Very cool place to be. But I was curious about the emperor brothers. I had no doubt that there was some sort of emperor brother thing happening in Rome. They've been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But how true was that to the story? What was mm-hmm. going on there? So we jumped straight into Geta and Caracalla.
Yeah.
The two brothers that were the emperors during this.
During Gladiator 2.
During Gladiator 2. Yeah.
Because they are portrayed as a little crazy, a little delulu.
Yeah.
Like, they are special. And they even indicate at one point that one of the brothers has, like, I think they're going for syphilis, right? Like, they indicated that
something.
His disease that affects your loins is affecting your brain or whatever. Like, one of those kind of comments. So I'm like, that's syphilis, I think, is what they were trying to indicate.
Right.
So we're like, okay, are these guys real? Did these things really happen to them? Like, who were they?
Yeah. And it was The research I found, what first off...
Oh, their names. Yes, we haven't even said that.
Well, Geta and Caracalla, we said that.
Oh, did you say that?
Yep.
Okay.
Right. We usually edit this stuff out. Welcome to the live show.
Hello.
anyway, interestingly, I didn't actually write down his full name because I didn't really care that much because he has like 18 names. But Caracalla is his nickname, basically. Yeah. They didn't really say where that came from. But his first name that's part of his full name was Lucius.
Yeah.
Which was the name of the main character, basically, in Gladiator 2, who was the carryover from Gladiator 1.
Yes.
So I thought that was an interesting...
It is interesting. I'll explain the connection to you as we go, because I
did not find that.
I went a little bit further with the people. I got really interested in the people in the movie. And you know why? I think it's because I think something that modern movies that are like historical period pieces, they like to pluck out big names, big characters, real people, and use them. And then, but like more as background, and then have their main people, their main characters be completely fictional. So they can do whatever they want with them. They can kill them. You know, they can marry them off to whoever they want, have them, whatever happened. But these other guys, these rulers, those kind of people are real, but they are still like tweaking who they were and what happened to them. So Gaeta and Caracalla were two that they definitely like tweaked their personalities a little bit.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. Well, they did both. Well, the movie, first off, takes place between, well, their rule together was 209,
actual rule.
209 to 211 CE.
Yeah.
That's when they ruled together.
Yes.
And the movie does take place during about that time. So that part is accurate.
Yeah. And Caracalla is interesting because he is the older brother and he was actually emperor from 198 to 217. And then his brother Gaeta was named co-ruler in 209. So he kind of joined him in 209.
Yeah.
But Caracalla was not super interested in like sharing the role with his brother.
No.
And I guess they just didn't get along very well in general. So
they didn't. And that's what I thought was an interesting departure from the movie, because the movie depicted them as, I don't know,
sort of supporting each other.
Yeah. Both crazy and both liking and hating the same things and both being crazy together.
Yeah.
And, that doesn't seem to be the case. In fact, in one of the things I read, their servants weren't even allowed in different parts of the palace together.
Yeah.
Like they were just like,
because they didn't trust each other.
No, they didn't trust each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, eventually it was only about 3 years into old Gaeta's rule, but Caracalla basically had him killed by the Praetorian Guard.
Yeah. And then Caracalla, his downfall happened in 217. And it wasn't a good death either. He was...
Well, Steph said they also killed all of his servants, too.
Oh, I'm sure they did. Makes sense. Of course, right?
You have to. Take them all down.
Caracalla was stabbed to death while urinating on the side of the road.
Oh, yeah.
And supposedly acting... Supposedly by a legionary that was acting on the orders of Macrinus. And now... Okay, great. He was murdered, too. Sounds like these guys were terrible rulers and... They eventually got what was coming to them, probably. So, and that is sort of true of how they were depicted in the movie, too, just in different ways. But, but Macrinus, you might, if you've seen the movie or you're going to see the movie, you might recognize that name because Macrinus is a character in the movie as well. And he is portrayed by the scheming gladiator trainer, as they described him, who was played by Denzel Washington that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And Denzel Washington, and this is a little bit of a spoiler alert, but his character, Macrinus, is. His like ultimate goal basically is to topple the entire Roman Empire, which
no
is like,
deal.
You know, like a really big goal for like one human to have. But I guess he was treated poorly by Marcus Aurelius in the past. He might've been a slave. That part was a little unclear.
He was
basically mad at all the Romans. So he wanted to take them down.
He had an agenda.
Yeah, he did. But he's got his real history of the real person is super fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So he was born in modern day Algeria, like I said earlier, and he was a member of what is called the equestrian social class. And that would have been directly below the senatorial class. So pretty high up there, right? And he rose to prominence as a lawyer and a bureaucrat before he eventually assumed control of the Praetorian Guard, who were, like you were saying, the personal protectors of the empire, of the emperor. And so he got pretty high up there. But he wasn't technically a member, you know, a senator or a member of the senatorial class. But he did run this guard, this Praetorian Guard. And so he had the loyalty of the soldiers, of the men on his side. And he used those men to assassinate Caracalla. And by doing so, he got the throne for himself. essentially.
Yeah. I mean, in the movie, he maintained rule for about 6-7 minutes, maybe. Yeah. It wasn't very long.
It wasn't long. And it almost didn't seem like he was trying to be the ruler. He was trying to escape Rome. It seemed like where he got kind of caught between the two armies who were coming at each other at the end of the movie.
He seemed like he may have been headed out, but
So.
But he reigned for 14 months. I don't know if you said that or not.
No, I haven't said that yet. Yeah. Go ahead.
He was inclined to use diplomacy rather than force. So he was probably seen as better than the other guys. But.
Yeah. And so like way different from the movie character who was scheming in the background. But, you know, the real guy kind of just wanted to like make peace with everybody. Sounds like.
Yeah. But then pulled a bad political move and cut new recruit wages and lost the army support.
Yep.
Yeah. So they basically executed and moved on to the next ruler. A lesson I think we could all take from politics. Really.
Yeah. You need the army support on your side, especially in ancient Rome. If you don't have their support, you know, you're not going to get too far. And he lost their support. It seems like a pretty petty thing to lose their support over. So I'm guessing it wasn't like the best support to begin with, probably. But anyway, that's what happened to him. It seems like it would have been the good start of a reign if he had been able to go anywhere with it.
But. It turns out Lucilla was a real person.
Yes. She
was a holdover from the G1.
Yes. And doing research on her, like, made me love her more than any of the other characters. Even though, I mean, she's like a little bit annoying.
She's a little whiny in the movie. Yeah, they could have made her a little more powerful.
Yeah, they could have made her like a little bit more badass. But that's all right. We'll forgive them for that. But she was a real person and she's pretty cool. So she was the actual daughter of Marcus Aurelius.
Yeah.
And the sister of Commodus.
Commodus?
Commodus? Commodus.
Commodus.
Who are the characters from the first movie. If you'll remember, Commodus is the one who was played by Joaquin Phoenix. And he was, you know, the major bad guy in the first movie, essentially.
You know, Commodus wasn't the first person named Commodus there. He was the Commodus 64us.
Oh, God. Why are you like this? Why do I have to live like this?
Am I the only one that was hearing that? Did you say Commodus?
Yes. You are alone, sir. this is my life.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so Lucilla. Okay, so here's where you were talking about the Lucius connection, right?
Yeah.
So Lucilla did have an actual son named Lucius Verus. And he died young, and he couldn't have been the secret child of a general turned gladiator because, well, obviously, Maximus, you know, is fictional from the first movie. And I don't remember if we kind of talked, we didn't want to like give away the whole plot of the movie, but it is sort of an important thing. Lucius, the boy from the first movie who was the son of Lucilla, is our gladiator in the second movie. He's been sent away to in hiding after Commodus dies and they're dealing with the aftermath of that. So
if you saw the first one, you kind of assume that.
Yeah.
Like in the first scene.
Yeah. You know, there's going to be a connection. And so Lucilla is the same character from the first movie as well. And she's in it. And anyway, she just is super interesting. She was a real person. She had this real son. He died young and they just kind of took that name and turned him into a character that they could use. For this movie, it seems like. I don't know. I'm not mad about it. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fun and entertaining. So.
Yeah, Commodus, played by Joaquin Phoenix.
Wait, hold on. We have to talk about how Lucilla died, because this is pretty important.
Oh, how she died, yes.
You checked off my note without actually looking at it. More stuff we usually edit out.
Hashtag editing.
So Lucilla's plot line and her life story is completely altered for these movies, because she could not have been, she was not alive during the reign of Gaeta and what's his name?
Caracalla.
Yeah, Caracalla. She was not alive. She was executed in 182 CE for conspiring to overthrow Commodus, her brother. So she was executed by him for, you know, trying to be better than he was, because he was a terrible ruler, apparently.
Yeah.
Now we'll tell you why he was terrible.
But. Which actually is a kind of a brilliant piece of writing in the movies, because that never happened, because Maximus, the fictional character, killed Commodus.
Yeah, I know. It's like an alternate history of Rome or something like that.
And she was able
to. Sort of what they're going for. Let's just say that they were going for that.
She was able to live another decade and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. Rather than just like messing with real history. I don't know. It's kind of frustrating sometimes, though, because these people have such interesting real stories and there's so much there that they could have used to make the story.
Yeah.
But because they were trying to make connections between people that were highborn senators, Caesars, whatever, and Gladiators, they had to create these fictional connections because otherwise they're just would not have been a connection at all. The right. Gladiators would never have even crossed paths with these higher born people except in the arena when they were watching them as spectators. So right. that's what the movie had to do. And I'm truly not mad about it because it just created the plot line what it is and it was fun.
Yeah.
So yeah. yeah, I think it's great.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about Commodus because he's pretty good.
Yes, Commodus.
Well, his plot line is obviously great, and who he was in the movies is very similar to who he was in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. He was described by Roman historian Cassius Dio as a bloodthirsty emperor who devoted most of his life to ease and to horses and to combats of wild beasts and of men. That's a hell of a description right there.
I know.
That's yeah. one of my tombstone, no matter what I do.
Wait, which one of those specifically? To horses?
A life of ease. I was going to say a life of to ease.
I didn't know you liked horses that much.
To ease and to podcast.
Okay.
And to...
All right, sounds good.
All of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're thinking that description is probably talking about combats that were held in the Colosseum, obviously, yeah. because he was in the heyday of the Colosseum.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most accounts of Commodus indicate that he was a terrible ruler. He insulted his senators. He played favorites and was generally scandalous. And basically everybody hated him from the mm-hmm. highborn to the lowborn and everybody in between.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not doing it right, not enough people hate you then. I don't know what to tell you.
Well, you know what happens if a lot yeah. of people hate you.
I know. In Rome, you better make some friends.
Yeah. So. Well, on December 31st, 192 CE, he was strangled in his bath by a wrestler named Narcissus.
I mean, that seems appropriate. A life of ease and he's strangled taking a bath.
I mean,
that's...
Didn't the Romans like spend a lot of time in baths?
There's worse ways to go in Rome. I'm just going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the reason that Narcissus strangled him is because basically there's a small group of conspirators. It consisted of Commodus's mistress, Marcia, the Praetorian prefect Aemilius Laetus, and his chamberlain Eclectus. They found themselves on basically a hit list, and they're like, no, we are not gonna let this guy murder us. So they yeah. took care of the murdering first.
Took care of the murdering.
They got that done first by hiring a wrestler to strangle him. I yeah. feel like there could have been another way, but you know what? It got the job done. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, that was the movie. I mean, we really liked it. It definitely takes some liberties with history and with who gladiators were, but it does some really cool things too, like showing how they flooded the Colosseum, which I don't know that a lot of people know that the Colosseum truly was flooded. So
yeah.
I like that part. Oh, one other thing we didn't mention is that gladiators were very specialized. And so in the movies, they always show like men and beasts coming together. In the new movie, there's like a big rhinoceros scene. In the old movie, I think there was like a lion or And in reality, that almost never happened because the gladiators were so specialized. There's like a whole special class of like hunter gladiators who would actually hunt the animal in the arena and kill it. And then the meat would be given out to the spectators. So it was a hunting spectacle, not a fighting spectacle in that case. So, you know, they sort of like lumped all the things that would happen in the Colosseum together in mm-hmm. these movies, which, you know, artistic license and all that, I guess we can kind of be okay with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still fine with it. I thought it was a good movie, so.
Okay. Enough on Gladiators?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right.
Oh, and like everybody is super hot. This is just for the girls. Just for my ladies. Just.
Well, don't be gender biased.
Oh, yeah, obviously. Just for like whatever your preference is.
Yeah, sure.
Lots of abs.
Sure.
Lots and lots of abs.
A lot of hotness in the movie. All right, I'm gonna yeah. share my screen here because we're gonna talk about one other really quick article here because we need your help.
Oh my God, this is so silly.
We need your help. So it turns out
we don't need help.
It turns out in Scotland, there is in Aberdeenshire, which I know that Tilly knows about and I know Tristan knows about. There's a visitor center. It's a prehistoric visitor center. I think it said Neolithic in here somewhere. But it was basically built, opened in 1997 by Time Team and Blackadder star Tony Robinson, dedicated to ancient history and culture of Northeast Scotland. Okay. And it is Archaeolink. Yes, Tilly. And Conan's saying the most boring, right? So I know, I love the, as in the title, right? That's just like sad. And the thing is here, they spent $4 million creating this thing. The town council or whatever, Scottish National Heritage and Aberdeenshire Council and this Grampian Enterprise thing put in more money, $2.5 million later on, just to revitalize the whole thing. And still nobody went. And I'm like, now it's £150,000. And I'm like, you can't get house for that.
We can do this, guys.
Like, we'll just put up some tents. I'll get my RV there. Let's just get a, APN crowdfund that. That's what I'm talking about. We need somebody to set up a GoFundMe, because I feel like if we set it up ourselves, it's not really right. But
oh my gosh.
So we'll set up a GoFundMe. We'll buy this in the name of the APN, and then we'll just have campouts there. And,
We'll just have APN live shows there. That'll be the background of all APN events.
Philly says they were terrible at marketing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, experimental archaeology center stuff. That's an excellent idea.
Yeah, totally. It sounds like a couple of you guys went there, and it was cool. So what happened?
Phyllis said she went there as a kid, but then it got shut down. Yeah. I got to tell you, I'm just looking at the pictures here, of course, and notoriously, you'll hear me say this on a number of podcasts if you listen to pretty much any show I've ever done, I hate museums. And I only hate museums because they're done poorly.
You just
hate,
like, the progression of artifacts.
I
almost without context half the time.
Like one of the worst museums I've ever been in is actually... that one in Naples, that archaeology museum, which is supposed to be, they've got so many cool things in it.
Yeah.
And they just did it so poorly. It's like, look at all of our fantastic
stuff. It's just like statues and busts. And you just parade through these halls of statues and busts.
And one of the best museums, it's not even a museum, it's a visitor center. One of the best visitor centers at our national parks in this country, if you've never been, mm-hmm. are like museums in some cases. They do have artifacts, they have displays, they have, you know, things that are from that park, really. And again, my kind of standard for all this is the one at Cahokia.
That place was really cool.
They just had this huge interior area that was like a full-size like diorama of life at Cahokia. They like built this village with people and all these things, and it was just like you could really see artifacts being used. You could see
how people lived.
Yeah,
it was beyond just the thing and like how it was used and who used it and why and all that. And just gave more life to these things.
Right, and that's what I'm getting out of this one, this Archaeolink one. Right, it's just I'm seeing these things that you can actually go in and see and look at and coolest tech gadgets of 2024. Wait a minute. And it looks like they did some recreations there and just they did all these kinds of cool things. And I'm just like, why didn't this get more play? Yeah. Tilly, what's up? Why didn't you tell anybody about it? Yeah. She said it was a management issue, she thinks. Yeah. I suppose open air museums in Scotland too, like bring a raincoat, right? So anyway, I think that's
okay, well, that's, goals for 2025, I guess, is to buy a visitor center in Scotland? Sure.
Yes. Yes. All right, well, Rachel's going to keep entertaining you about why we are going to buy a visitor center in Scotland, and I'll be back in 1 minute.
He's got something special that I kind of knew about. He's trying to keep it a secret from me, but this is the 10-year anniversary.
You guys
can
still hear me.
I'm going to get it right now, but... Yeah, I can't imagine having a APN visitor center that's on a different continent than the one that we currently live on. But hey, maybe we'll just come over and visit more often, right? Oh, here he comes.
All right, well, we're going to close the show out. We're not the last ones to go today. Pseudo-archaeology is, but I'm not a huge champagne drinker, but Rachel is.
We love a little champs.
Now, I went to buy just for, the camera's up here. I went to buy just for effect, a bottle of Dom, to be honest with you, Dom Perignon. But this snooty bastard at Total Wine here actually shamed me into buying this other one. That was like $30 cheaper. I didn't even really care about that. I was like, I'm going to buy the nice one. But he's like, this one's way better. Everybody gets Dom because it's Dom. I'm like, shut up, snooty bastard. So this is anyway called... Noble. Let's see. Let's get it out of this fancy box here. We got a Noble 2004.
You should have gotten one that started the same year.
That's hard to find. Although Dom was pretty close. It was 2012. Yeah. So I know, snooty bastards. All right. So what is, let's hear some comments from the chat over here. What, if we were to change anything about the archaeology show, if you guys are listeners, what would you do?
Oh God, are we asking for feedback right now? Is champagne?
I want feedback.
Do you need some help here?
I don't think I got this.
This is not really your thing. I'm the one who opens the wine in our house.
I got the champagne, damn it. Incidentally, this is how our show goes. You just don't get most of it. Conan likes the variety of the content. Tilly says, pay for the hosts. Yeah. I see it. Yep. Thanks, Tilly.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know why we can't afford
more
pay. I don't know, Tilly, why we can't afford pay for the hosts. Oh. I'm not really sure where the money is going.
He is so annoying.
Listen, you want to know what?
I'm not sure I like him like a lot of the time.
You want to know what? I actually did something for the company that I work for. I keep looking down here. I did something for the company that I work for, and it's in Australia, and they're super cool people. Like, you got to work for a company like this because I did this last minute deal. It was a 3-hour training for one of their big clients, and it was late at night my time. It was like 8 to 11 p.m. or 7 to 10 p.m. or something like that. They told me about it that morning, and the person who was going to do it couldn't do it, and this client is like, we're going to walk if you don't do this. And so I did it, and they sent me this gift card. That you could basically convert into any other gift card. It was like this online thing. So
I can't believe you didn't buy fancy whiskey with it.
I was going to buy fancy whiskey, but I figured I'd celebrate the APN instead.
I'm not really a whiskey drinker. Like a
I know.
Little bit, but,
I know. Yeah. So most of this cost actually came from that gift card, to be honest.
All right. Well, popping it. You didn't even pop it.
I didn't want to pop it.
Okay. All right. Well, 10 years. The APN. I've really only been part of it for like 4.
But well, you've been part of it for 10.
Well, I've lived with it for 10.
You've lived with it for 10.
Like it or not.
Yeah, you've been with me when I was editing at 12:30 at night.
I have.
And this is also to celebrate Rachel a little bit too. She has because of the work I'm doing and just, you know, to help us out because obviously we live together. I needed somebody to really take a bigger load on the editing and Rachel really did that. You know, she learned some of the editing. She was doing a little bit of it here and there, but then we just kind of made the conscious decision. It's more cost effective for me to do this other work that actually pays me more and for her to do the APN editing because, here's the secret sauce here. Nobody gets paid to do the APN editing. So, and it's probably 15 to 20 hours a week on heavy weeks. And we just added 4 new shows, 2 of which were today. Stephanie, thank you. But it was just a little bit of a thank you. Not that it's
thank
enough.
You.
But
I anyway. Do love a nice fancy champagne, so I'll take it as my thanks. You've just set a precedent, though.
I can't tell like the difference. This could be $40.
Are you kidding me? This is the most delicious thing I've
ever
drank.
This is actually
pretty
good.
Oh, my God. We need to go share it with my sister.
Champagne's
I need
usually,
to go find somebody who actually knows champagne.
Champagne's usually a little bitey for me, but this is super smooth. Mm-hmm. So anyway, thanks, everybody, for... You know, hanging out, those of you that are here. Paul, we need to start up the Archaeotech podcast again.
Don't use this moment to shame Paul.
I'm going to shame Paul right now. He hasn't commented
not.
At all. I don't know what he's doing.
Anyway, thanks. Not just thanks to me, though. Thanks to everybody for creating the amazing content that you guys create. So much work into it. And I'm editing the episode, so I hear almost every single thing that is going out on the APN. And it's just all so wonderful. It's amazing. And you guys are all so smart and you're doing the coolest things. And I love being part of this community. If I complain about editing at 10 o'clock at night sometimes. So,
and don't forget before she logs off and literally falls asleep because it's super late there and she has kids. This wouldn't have happened today if it weren't for Tilly.
Yes. Tilly, you are amazing.
Yeah, Tilly
I don't
put
know
all
what we
together.
Would do without you. The APN was just like bumping along doing its thing. But ever since you joined it,
I was doing a lot.
You were putting so much content out. You're putting so much content out, but Tilly has helped the world know about this content. And so
really
we appreciate
has.
Her so much for that.
She really has. Yeah, she's really doing it. And now Ash, who's Tilly's co-host on MI Trowel, is our executive producer now. And, and she's really, we've been struggling to figure out what that term even means. And she's just taken it and run with it. She's just done
it's
amazing.
Been fabulous.
She's keeping our... She's keeping our new shows on track. She's keeping some of our existing shows on track. And it's just good to have somebody else in your corner saying, hey, I understand I'm here too, and I can help you out with scheduling and making sure you've got you know, you've got content coming up. Just somebody kind of keeping an eye on it.
Definitely. So. But yeah,
thanks
to everybody.
Yep, indeed. Cheers. All right, well, cheers to that.
And cheers to you guys.
Thanks, everybody. Don't go anywhere. The pseudo archaeology podcast, apparently, without Frederick, maybe, if I heard correctly, is coming up at the top of the hour, which should be in just about 15 minutes. So we are going to sign off. Thanks, everybody, for your good questions. And we'll see you guys.
Fun.
We'll see you guys next time. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ArcPodNet. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. The Archaeology Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. And our chief editor is Rachel Roden. The Archaeology Podcast Network was co-founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in 2014 and is part of Cultural Media and DigTech LLC.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.